most important breaking news.
Breaking news.
Hello and welcome to this breaking news edition of What Most People Think. And we are doing this because, of course, Keir Starmer has now delivered his six political milestones. Or were they millstones? A few people have done that joke. I'm going to call them gallstones because I reckon they might give him jip over time. And he's done them. We're going to talk about the main bit of the podcast. We're going to talk about what were they? But also, why did he do them? What was the point of this? Who was he really talking to? Because, you know, the British public at this time of the year, I mean, I'm already getting a lot of people saying, can we circle back to this in January? Which means I just don't want to give a fuck about this yet. New plans, really? Now? In this week of all week? I mean, the only thing people are really responding to email-wise is like, should we book a table? Should we book a table? What time? Should we start early? Should we start early? Should we make it a lunch? I don't really think about big plans. I mean, the weird thing is that if you'd have done it in the new year, right? There's a branding overlap there with New Year's resolutions. Keir's New Year's resolutions. It makes sense then to do it. So maybe there were other reasons that he did it now. So we'll be getting into that. It was an interesting week for me. I managed to blag an invite to the Spectator Parliamentarian of the Year party. And as a politics nerd, you're going to say yes. Although I did feel like a bit of a plum going because I didn't know who I'd know. You know, it's not really my world. It's their world. Journos and politicians. I mean, I say this about politicians and journos. It's like, whether they're opposed to each other or not, it's a very energetic scene. It's not like you go to a comedy party, everyone looks so fucking self-conscious, staring at their feet, you know, it's all looking over your shoulder. It was quite funny, you know, Michael Gove hosted it. He's got proper like stand-up comedian timing. So I'm a bit cautious about what I can say because I sort of thought it was a bit what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. There's nothing cancelable happened, but a few of the jokes were a bit rum, you know, as an old Tory might say. But something was already, the news agents referred to it, so I think I can mention this, is that when Farage, he won Newcomer of the Year award, which is kind of like an ironic win, I guess, that he's the age he is and he's had seven goes at it. A bit like when I went to Edinburgh in 2009 and Mickey Flanagan won Newcomer of the Year, because it was his first Edinburgh, but he was a real season pro by then. By the way, I'm not in any way comparing Mickey Flanagan and Nigel Farage, but he come up Farage, and all of the speeches had been pretty funny. You know, with a few exceptions, they've been pretty funny. So everyone thought of Farage, you know, do the Farage thing, blah, blah, and make a few gags, make everyone laugh. And he actually instead issued a very grave warning to all the Tories, well, actually Labour as well in the room, that, you know, this time it was five MPs, next time it will be hundreds, we're coming for you. And it was like that, like it got very quiet, you know, because the Tories are particularly, you know, worried about the rise of reform. And it sort of the air went out of the room, and then Michael Gove went on afterwards and just went, what a confident young man. And I'll tell you, the timing of it was proper funny. Like, because the thing with comedy is you need to break the tension. So Farage created the tension and Gove like a proper MC. I mean, I don't know if he ever fancied it, but that man, he could have happily done a Jongleurs Weekend at Bow back in the mid-noughties. We've got some new patrons, got a couple of new patrons. Remember, if you are a patron, sorry, you're a patron, you get the podcast early, ad-free, and with bonus content. And we've got a VIP here. So let's welcome our VIP properly. We've got David Todd, but I don't know if he's left off a D. But it's just T.O. David Todd. Nickname on the stag do, you're going to be on your Todd. D.T. Toddy. Todd D. I reckon you're a D.T. Everyone loves a D.T. Is D.T. coming? Fucking great. D.T. Amazing. And a name like David Todd, I think you're a copper. I think you're a copper, but I think you're one of those reasonable ones on the, you know, like you were poacher turned gamekeeper, right? You ran a bit wild when you were young and, yeah. Then one day you stared a five stretch in the face and went, no, I need to make my life. I need to make something of my life. I want to protect my community. Maybe I want to be one of these 13,000 coppers that Keir Starmer is employing. So welcome, DCI Todd. There you go. You're a proper like line of duty style character, and you are very welcome in the VIP area. You're very welcome to help yourself to unlimited English sparkling wine. And we've also got Pete Mills. I think Pete Mills is a returner, but I'm guessing, are you related to Scott Mills? That must be annoying if you're related to Scott Mills, because he's, you know, quite famous, but not that fame that you can really dine out on. You know, you're not going to pick up women on the basis that your brother is Scott Mills. It's like that geezer who's John Major's brother, Terry Major or something. I remember a girl I used to go out of, Terry Major, lived up the road. It was just like John Major. The whole thing was so unremarkable that John Major's brother just lived up the way, looked exactly like him. Yeah, whatever happened to John Major's brother? Was his name Terry Major? I'll leave that one to David Domain, our super patron, who picks up on such things. And speaking of which, Domain talking point, David has said that William Clapp, so we were talking about Labour's, Labour's slightly flaccid, huge majority. It's a very weird oxymoron. But William Clouston has described that Labour landslide as a mile wide but an inch thick. I mean, it does sound like does sound like a description of a really odd-looking penis, doesn't it? Big cock, tiny balls. No, that's what... Big balls, tiny cock. That was what the Labour victory was, just to take it as base a level as I can. We also mentioned about men dying more from prostate cancer than women dying of breast cancer. Not making it a competition, but just comparing the relative media attention that both those things get. And Cancer Research UK states that female survival rate is better than male in general. Oh, yes, I have heard this in all cancers, right? He's attached a graph from the House of Commons Library detailing cancer deaths in England for 2021 by sex and age groups. The disparity is certainly noticeable for those age 50 and above. The library also states that during 2023 in England, the incidences of cancer were 21% higher for men than women. I mean, I don't know how much higher it's got to be before people, but of course they're men. They do it to themselves. It's their own fault, they've got agency. Male privilege, they've got to sort it out themselves, the amount of cancer that they're getting. And David also refers again to the jet stream. So we're still talking about the weather event that happened a few weeks ago where overnight, there was a swing from like minus one to like 17 degrees. And look, I never said, I haven't gone all Greta Thunberg, all right? I never said that it was definitely man. I just said that I had not known, whatever climate change is happening, what you put it down to and what we do about it is the thing that's up for debate. I'm just saying, I didn't know a swing that great in my life. But David says you can actually track. You can track online the jet stream where it is over the UK. And yesterday it was to the north, bringing mild air from Portugal. So it's 14 degrees up north. But it sunk to the south today, drawing down from the Arctic. So it's back to cold tomorrow. I'll be honest, I am actually tempted to look at that live tracker of the jet stream. But it's one of those things that on my internet history. I actually think if my wife found that I was watching that, she'd be sort of more disturbed than if I was watching depraved porn.
What most people think.
Okay, so the thank you and the fuck you. The thank you is to... Well, so I had a tweet go viral this week, right? I'll just explain to you. It's so weird. Like, I'm sort of... Look, all right, I'll just explain how it happened. I was in Cambridge and I was walking past Everyman Cinema, right, in the shopping centre. And I noticed it said Gladiator 2, like i.e. Screen 2, I think, or maybe 2 o'clock, and it said Paddington 3. And I thought it looked like a football score. So I did a post, took a photo of it, did a post, and I said, massive away win for the little fella, right? And I just posted it. I sort of thought that might do all right because it's funny, it's silly and stuff. By the time me and my wife went around the corner, sat down to have a pizza, 15 minutes later, it had like 5,000 likes. I was like, oh, right, okay. It's interesting to see how this goes. Now, first up, I'm not bigging this up. It's very weird for me to be talking about a post. But this thing went so mental. It ended up, I mean, it's still going, you know. It's 180,000 likes, which is, just for clarity, I think my previous best tweet was like 40,000 or something like that. And I did not realize that the reach that little bear has, the soft political power of Paddington Bear, he's sort of like a CGI Martin Lewis. Romish texted me about it. Comedians have been congratulating me. I mean, it is weird. It sounds like I'm trying to get more credit for it, but I genuinely think it's a weird thing to get congratulated for something that literally was just like a stupid thought to pass through your head as you passed a thing. The Spectator thing, politicians were mentioning it to me, and I was thinking, this is good, you know. I've done 5 national tours. I've done a couple of books, you know, a couple of documentaries. But it's a post about Paddington fucking Bear. This is it. This is the moment that makes my career. It's a post about Paddington Bear. Then the problem is you're sort of thinking, right, have I got any other Paddington stuff, right? It's clearly what the public want. So I sort of thought, yeah, if they ever bring back This Is Your Life, in the This Is Your Life in my head, that'll be it now. That'll be the only thing that anyone will think that I've achieved in my life. Is going. So talk us through the Paddington tweet. Well, you know, it was, just one of those days, if something was in the air. I was out with my wife and I felt like someone was going to change in my life. A fucking tweet, for God's sake. Jesus Christ. The fuck you is this is an irritation. I know we're going to get onto Keir Starmer in a minute, but this is a Starmer irritation from PMQs. Now, first up, right, health warning is, I know that Rishi Sunak evaded questions. I know that all politicians evade questions, but there is something about the directness of the way that Keir Starmer does it. I mean, it's literally like, ignore question, say 22 billion. I mean, he's got no respect for PMQs, right? Because he doesn't have to, because he's got 400 MPs. He's got the Lib Dems sitting there and Ed Davey's soft soaping him every week. I mean, what is the point in Ed Davey, by the way? PMQs, we might as well just cancel it till the next election, right? Because you're going to get kind of puff piece questions from the Labour MPs. The Tories are just sitting there, still looking like they're in shell shock. The Tories are just looking like, you know, one of those premiership clubs that within two seasons they're in League One. That's what they look like. They're going, is this all we got now? There's still some other people coming, right? And but Kemi Badenoch, who's still, you know, is having good moments, but is still flattering to deceive a little bit. She goes back to this Louise Hay resignation because she thinks that she's got Starmer, basically. She asks him about it. He kind of, because she also mentioned migration, so he then immediately ignores the question and says, oh, what a marked difference, you know, for the last 14 years when, you know, the disgrace of public service, you know, just went on his usual spiel. But he also said, when new information came to light, I acted, right? So immediately the question is, and Kemi did ask it, what was that new information? And he stood up and went, well, I'm not going to reveal that, you know, at the House. I'm not going to, as though it's some awful, as though it's beyond the pale, the idea that the Prime Minister, having sacked a minister for a reason, won't share that reason with the British public. And then he went back on to 40 years of 22 billion. I mean, he's not even trying at this point. He would just say 14 years, 22 billion to fucking anything, right? It's like some weird parlour game. And I just thought at that point, Kemi, you've got to keep asking him that question, because if you now, the sort of disdain that he's showing for PMQs here and the British public is something that you want to mine a little bit. Just keep asking him. You know, I would have said, look, yeah, you could talk about the last 14 years if you like. I want to talk about the last 14 days. I want to talk, you can talk about the past. I want to talk about the conduct of this government right here and right now. So I'll ask you again, what was the new information that came to light? And he would get up again. The point is then that goes to the news as kind of like a compilation of six times the UK Prime Minister refused to answer a question. But I don't know. I know it's a hard thing to do, is to stand up in the Commons, because what would happen is the Labour MPs would sort of start making, you know, sort of catcalling her and say, this is ridiculous, ask a different question. But it would be worth doing it, because it would, God, I've got annoyed here. I think this is a really bad time to have the makeup in Parliament that we have, right? We have a party that got about 34% and they've got so many seats. We've got the Lib Dems. I mean, like, Ed Davey almost looks like he wants to apologise every time he asks Starmer a question. Like, sorry, mate, I've got to do this. It's in the contract, mate. It's in the contract. They, you know, they're a bit too fucking pally. You know, the SNP were always very, Stephen Flynn was always very good at asking questions. And he now gets, what, like one question every so often. So I do think there's a problem with a real lack of scrutiny in the Commons. So yeah, why not just knock it on the head 4.5 years? Says, fuck it, if you're not going to answer the questions, let's just give it a miss. Okay, having said all that, let's go into Keir's milestones with an open mind, or try to anyway, because we had Labour's first steps. Do you remember that? Labour's first steps followed by Labour's first day at nursery, you know, Labour's first school trip. Then we've had their missions. Now we've got their milestones. We haven't had targets yet. I don't think we've had targets, because targets is a very civil service word. So obviously they've steered clear of that. It was at Pinewood. And I don't really know why it was at Pinewood Studios. I don't know if I've done a few records of TV shows there. And it's in a real sort of bollocake of a place. So it's sort of like you're winding up journos anyway, who really, you know, they talk about getting outside the Liberal bubble. These guys don't want to get outside Zone 1, mate. You know, if you ask them to go to a press junket in Hounslow, they'd be like, fucking hell, where's my passport? So why is it a Pinewood is the question. I don't understand. Maybe they feel like they can build a set there that makes it look out exactly what they want. I think there was a little joke about James Bond at the beginning. I mean, Keir Starmer and James Bond, that is, you know, you wouldn't often hear that idea together. Yeah. Keir Starmer, 0014 years, 0022 billion. So, you know, at least tell us a little tidbit of something that you've seen at Pinewood. Have you seen Hemsworth, brother? They're making a new Marvel, something like that. But there was very little reference to it being there, so I don't really understand the point of that. And speaking of point, like, who was he talking to? That was the That was the issue that I was thinking, right? Because we know, as I said before, the public are already getting their heads in Christmas mode. It seemed to be maybe the civil service, right? Because there were rumours, you know, back in the Tory administration from Brexit onwards, that the civil service are either a bit shit or a bit resistant, right? They don't do what they're asked, especially if they're ideologically against it. So when Boris Johnson or Dominic Raab or Priti Patel alluded to this and basically said that they were crap, which I think we said earlier in this week's episode with Alan Cochrane, they were bullies. But sort of Labour are now alluding to it, and it's like one of those licences that Labour get. You know, if Labour, I've said it for years, they're probably better placed to reform the NHS than the Tories, because if the Tories do it, they're evil, right? If Labour talk about civil service, like, well, they're not being able to get through the plans that the country needs. Equally, it does work the other way. You know, when Tories do tax rises, it's not as dystopian as when the Labour Party do it. You know, the Labour Party raise a tax and everyone goes, it's communism. So I do accept that this both works both ways. But so he's talking about, you know, what he needs to do to get his radical agenda through. He talks about the Alliance of Naysayers. The Alliance of Naysayers was a funny phrase. Sort of sounded like one of those folk bands you get on the John Peel stage. We are Alliance of Naysayers. I mean, it didn't sound a million miles away from the anti-growth coalition. And speaking of, you know, sort of quite almost aligning himself with sentiments expressed by Liz Truss. He did this one. There's one sentence I think that particularly stood out, where he said, "Look, I'm not saying we need to drain the swamp." Okay, you're not right. You're not saying it, but you've brought the phrase in out of the cold. You are saying it. You're saying the phrase. You know, literally, sort of almost invoking Trump speak. But he said, "Yeah, there are too many civil servants that are happy to bathe in the tepid water of managed decline," which is just an incredible sentence. First up, I wouldn't say tepid water if I spoke like you, because that is just the most apt description of your oratory skills. You are tepid water, Keir. You know, and also, you talk about managed decline, you do sort of seem a little bit like, you know, in a football club going into administration, you seem absolutely like the bloke that would be brought in to execute that. So they're interesting. You know, if you're just thinking about how sketch writers might pick up on stuff, they were interesting phrases. But you know, it was kind of interesting that thing that Dominic Cummings has been saying for a while, about the intransigence of the civil service and the inability to sort of push through anything resembling anything radical. You know, here's Keir Starmer saying it now. So, you know, just to get ahead of like the question of why he did this and who he was talking to, given that maybe the British public aren't listening that keenly at that point, maybe it was a shot across the bows of the civil service. But let's get into the pledges themselves. Let's deal with them one by one. Raising living standards in every part of the UK. Aim to deliver the highest sustained growth in the G7. So there was talk that they were going to drop this because they should never have said it. It's just mental. It's the highest sustained growth in the G7. What? You've got no control over this. There's a lot of other countries in the G7 that could just do some random radical shit. And even if you had good growth, you might not be the highest. It's sort of like the political equivalent of going, we're going to be the bestest. We're going to be the bestest. My dad is going to be up your dad. It was just an odd thing, because they're not sort of under pressure. Like, I don't think there's even any, you know, we're quite modest and a bit browbeaten in this country. There's no one just sitting there going, why can't we commit to having the best growth anywhere in the known universe? We weren't wanting that pledge. But they've tempered it a bit with raising living standards in every part of the UK. So there is this political move now to say that maybe this broad metric like GDP is a bit of a blunt instrument. Maybe actually are most people getting richer? Maybe that's what we should be looking at. Yeah, maybe, lads. Rebuilding Britain, build 1.5 million homes in England and fast track planning decisions on at least 150 major infrastructure projects. Well, I'm fully behind this. You know, too much stuff in this country gets stuck in the soup, the tepid soup of reviews. And but yeah, stuff gets called in. There's stuff that should have been done like decades ago. And people making fucking money out of these reviews and consultations and, you know, for work that never happens. So completely behind that. And, you know, they've admitted that it is ambitious Labour. But yeah, I think he also invoked John F. Kennedy as well. He said, we do these things not because they're easy, but because they're hard. I thought, oh, again, tepid baths, comparisons with tepid baths and John F. Kennedy. I wouldn't necessarily be going there, mate. But I sort of did some rough fag packet maths on 1.5 million homes. That would be the Trump claim, wouldn't it? We're going to make 1.5 million homes in England. So it's just in England. All right. That's 900 completed homes a day for the duration of this parliament. Now, I don't know about you. that seems bold. All right. So let's see how they get on with that. But he's put it down as a milestone. He said, you know, judge me. Yeah, I do. Ending hospital backlogs. 92% of patients will wait no longer than 18 weeks. I think these are for elective procedures, right? First up, that's one of those things where the public might go, that's still quite long, man. That might actually, maybe that's the reason they're doing it, is to alert people that how bad it's got. And, you know, with some of these targets, there is a sense that maybe they're setting these, milestones, they're setting them because stuff like this is happening anyway. You know, there was that kind of bottleneck of things where during COVID, where we basically terrified the shit out of people and made them not go to hospitals. What a great shout that was.
What most people think.
Okay, we're still working through the milestones here. Police back on the beat. 13,000 additional officers and a named police officer for every neighbourhood. Do we get to name him? Oh, that'd be fun, wouldn't it? Do we get to name him, the police officer? You know, not Boaty, Policey McPolice face, but a named police officer. So that guy has to always be there. That is proper. Like, that's a bit boring for the copper. What if you get a boring neighbourhood? Just already thinking of the film Hot Fuzz, but also define neighbourhood. I think for this milestone to make any sense, we need to know what neighbourhood means. You'll get your own police officer. This neighbourhood is called Reading. All right, 13,000 police officers. I think there were already more at the back end of the last Conservative government, but they're going to do even more. Giving children the best start in life, getting 75% of five-year-olds in England ready to learn when they start school. I mean, this is one of these, again, surprised it isn't already happening. A lot of people are like, blah, blah, blah. You sort of shake your eyes at what? Why aren't they all ready to learn? Well, you know, we're not allowed to judge parents up here, for parents are very under pressure, you know. There are far too many kids that arrive at school that haven't got the basics of talking and sharing and you know, not acting like fucking crazed animals. So, it's a good milestone. I think some of these you're kind of going, any government that were in power now would have to do these, I think. You know, whether it's Tory, Reform, Lib Dems, you'd have to do this or more. Securing homegrown energy, putting the UK on track to at least 95% clean power by 2030. Now, some of you might go, well, weren't they saying 100%? Well, it sounds like a dilution of what they'd already said, but it turns out the reason that is because they hadn't checked, and you need to have 5% in fossil fuels and gas and stuff just in case there's a disaster and stuff. So one of their milestones that they already promised was undeliverable in the first place. But there you go. Those are the six milestones. Interestingly, there was nothing specific about immigration. There was a thought in some circles that they're doing this relaunch. Don't call it a reset. Don't call it a comeback. Partly to head off the rise of Reform, who I think were like second in a poll this week. Why would you not mention it? Why would you not say anything specific about immigration? Maybe that, you know, maybe, right? So he said in his own speech, we do it not because it's easy, but because it's hard. I would say that the reason that you didn't do a specific target on immigration was because it's hard. It really is fucking hard, you know? And I sort of thought maybe it was weird as well, because a lot of the immigration that we had over the last couple of years was to do with Ukraine and Hong Kong and Afghanistan to an extent. And also some of the changes that Rishi put in late, you know, on dependents and certain visas, it's kind of going to go down anyway. So I sort of thought it was odd. I don't know. I suppose if he says, right, we're going to bring it down to 300,000, then Reform will just go, what, 300? You know, fraud will go, 300,000. That's still a city the size of Reading. I don't know why Reading is a theme this week. So he just said that cutting immigration was one of the foundational things a government must do. But make no mistake, he said, this plan will land on desks across Whitehall with the heavy thud of the gauntlet being laid down. Is that me? Is it just me, or is there something phallic in that? Like he's saying, I want to put my big dick on your table, like Lyndon Johnson. So yeah, maybe, you know, maybe this is why he's doing the speech. Actually, it just occurred to me that the Alliance of Naysayers, that sounds like a Monty Python sketch, does it? We are the Alliance of Naysayers and Nimbys. And they would just like oppose any development in their town. You know, we don't want a chip shop, it's too smelly. We don't want a coffee shop, there's too many mums with prams. So yeah, wrapping up, you know, who was it to? Probably the civil service. Why is he saying it? Well, I think also there's a different thing. The audience might be different from the reason why he's saying it. It's because they've had a bad start. They have, you know, they might, you know, they are pound for pound, the amount of times they've been in the news for negative reasons has been certainly up there with the run rate, right? And so, you know, you could say, well, the right-wing press are leading the charge here. Maybe there's a bit of that. But even if you strip up, most of it is legitimate stories. Most of it is pensioners, you know, taxes on farmers, falling business confidence. You know, Sue Gray went, Louise Hay went. I don't know if your surname rhymes with Hay or Gray, you know, then you're fucked. And also, maybe he's trying to repoint the style of his premiership because he's isolated, really. I mean, his mate Barnier over in France, he's gone. By the way, Barnier was only prime minister in France for 2 months. So are they now the laughing stock of the world? Do you remember that, Liz Truss? That's what, there were certain people online that were the laughing stock of the world, which in itself I always thought was a bit arrogant. I'm not sure people give that much of a fuck, to be honest. But yeah, he's gone. So I don't know did he have a lettuce throughout his time in power? If it was a lettuce, given it was French, was it a beautiful rocket with a drizzle of olive oil and sea salt? But, you know, Barnier's gone. And then you look around the world, you've got Trump, Maloney, the Argentinian fella. You know, there's a lot of these kind of strong men, populist types. Maybe he's like, I'm going to do my strong men thing. I'm going to slap my power dick down on your desk. No, but it's quaintly British. The time that the globe moves towards strong men, we've got Colin from accounts. But the point is, like, how plausible is all this stuff? It's another twist in persona from, you know, we had second, you know, like you have loads of different Barbies. You know, we had second referendum Keir. We had continuity Corbyn Keir when he ran for office. We had sort of like a new Labour Keir. And now it's sort of like drain the swamp Keir. So while I agree with a lot of his objectives and even the ideas in this speech, I have no idea now politically who this bloke is, right? You know, who he is as a person, or whether any of the sensible things, or some of the sensible things that he's saying, can be taken at face value. So that was my analysis. What do you think? Email whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. Am I being a bit hard on Keir? Is he just being pragmatic? You know, he is sort of a small C conservative. Is he just adapting to the world around him? Are those targets kind of similar things that he would have wanted to achieve at any time? Maybe the drain the swamp stuff is all just, you know. Do you reckon he texted Trump? I used to drain the swamp. Hope you don't mind. I used to drain the swamp thing. Just hope we're still cool. After Labby hasn't called you a Nazi for like 2 weeks. So let me know what you think. But it's interesting times politically. And I guess, look, somebody like me, I'm talking about it. Maybe some of it is just drawing a line as well, giving people like me something else to talk about than the rolling kind of like ministerial things and the taxes and the pensioner stuff. So let me know what you think. Next week, I've got Matt Ford on the show, a lot of you. So Matt has had some famous appearances, well, famous within the context of this podcast. There was a time that he absolutely laid into the Tories and I got stick from listeners for not pushing back on stuff, and then he came on recently and talked about it, like, his incredible comeback from cancer as such a young man. You know, a lot of people took a lot of like inspiration from the way he spoke about what he'd been through. So this time it's my turn to try and pin him to the wall on Labour's first few months. So we're going to do it in a light-hearted way, but it should be good fun. I hope you enjoy your weekend. This has been What Most People Think Breaking News.